Hello, my media masochists, and welcome to The Worst Show on Earth, a podcast where my friends and I watch what are purported to be some of the crappiest television shows in history in an effort to discover which is the absolute worst. I'm Matt Murphy, and I have really been looking forward to watching more Cleopatra 2525. I was half disappointed, half thrilled, just as I expected. With me today, I'm lucky enough to be joined by Rachel, film studies major and former audiovisual librarian.
And current reference librarian.
Ooh, moving on up. We also have Alex, production IT and self-professed garbage enthusiast.
Oh, absolutely. Hello.
Next is Tachi, who I lovingly refer to as the human IMDb.
Yes, thank you. Many have referred to me as this. I appreciate it. I got a lot of thoughts swirling in my head right now about what we just did.
And finally, we have our very first special guest. With us today is Katie the Canadian.
Hello!
Welcome to the United States, first of all.
Thank you. I am familiar with the country. I was from here.
Oh, that's what I thought.
Yeah. I left the country for... I fled for 4 years and spent the best 4 years of my life in Canada.
Oh!
And then came back. I was 9 through 12, 13.
So it wasn't like by choice.
Oh no, my family totally abducted me and going to Canada. I had no word, no say at all.
So last night, I had the fortune of having discussions with some friends about what are you doing tomorrow night? And I was like, I'm recording this podcast with my friends and we are watching, it's called Worst Show on Earth, and we're watching terrible TV and then talking about it. And we're watching Cleopatra 2525. And they're like, oh, what's that? I'm like, oh, well, let me tell you. It is about, we're not sure what it's about, but the premise is that a stripper from the year 2000 or 2001.
Something like that.
But the show was shot in the 90s. So, you know, the far future for the 90s. But the show occurs in the year 2525. And a stripper has a botched boob job, is cryogenically frozen, and sent to the future where things just happen. But the costuming is amazing. And they were like, oh, this sounds really good. And I was like, but it's not, though. They fell into the trap. And she's like, I'm going to check it out. I was like, the opening is incredible. The music is amazing. The rest of it is not. Like,
the music is amazing, I think, in the sense that you are amazed that this is on TV.
Yes.
Every time the theme starts, everyone watching starts to do some
dancing,
some bopping, some shaking.
Yeah,
it's so true.
And some odd facial expressions because it is completely dissonant to the tone.
Yeah, how did you feel about that? So this is Katie's first experience.
Yes, we threw Katie in the deep end.
Yeah, the only thing I had seen before was the photos on the DVD. And that did not prepare me. I thought I had more footing, but nope.
I'm curious, Katie, what information, you've got the info about the botched boob job and the cryogenic freezing.
Which I have no, what, I, that was not referenced at all in either of the episodes.
So we are, what, it's, 8 episodes in now?
This
ten.
Is episode
ten?
8, yeah.
Oh, this is
no,
eight.
No, this has got to be 9. I want to know, Katie, what other info about this world?
Ooh.
Yeah. What world are we in here?
Let's see. Kind of industrial. There's lots of railings.
Yes! I'm so happy you mentioned
that. I want to say that in the future, fire is also two different colors. We've got green fire as well as
I loved
normal
how
color fire.
That was science fire, though.
Science fire.
Well, no,
yeah.
I mean, like, a clean flame is a blue flame, right? So a green flame is burned with a different chemical. So, like, what chemicals are they burning? Is it
science.
Just, like, putting it out into the atmosphere for everyone to breathe?
Yeah, basically.
Oh, no, they're underground.
Yeah, so that's even worse. because there's no breeze.
There's not a lot. They're not thinking things through in this world.
Now, is that something you knew, or that they were underground the whole time?
No. No, I don't feel that was ever introduced.
What's great is it's in the opening, but it's breezed by so quickly you wouldn't.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to absorb what was coming in, and I guess some details kind of skipped on.
What about the characters? Anything about these three heroes?
One of them knows how to act.
the one
whose career continued after this show?
Yes, exactly. The one who I have seen in other things.
Yes.
She did a great job.
We love Gina Torres.
Cleopatra. Yeah. Wow.
Her name is Jennifer Sky, and she was one of the hyena people in the 6th episode of Buffy. Human IMDb!
I...
drop the mic!
Don't do that. They're very expensive.
I hope I don't drop in anyone's esteem, but I have not seen any Buffy.
That's all right.
I think I knew that.
I only started watching it because my friends were all watching it, and I wanted to hang out with them.
I've seen more Angel than Buffy. Interesting. Because I had friends who were watching Angel.
That's a whole talk we're going to have sometime.
Sorry.
There's also a third member of the team, Sarge. What did you think about Sarge, Katie?
Oh, what was his, like, glittery, like, 18-pack?
That's not Sarge.
That's not Sarge.
You've already forgotten that there are three of them.
There are three ladies.
Three ladies. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were just breezing over the third lady.
Oh, no,
and we're
no.
just moving on.
I should have asked,
can you name the three characters?
No. I can name Cleopatra.
Because her name is...
In the title.
On the show.
And they said it a lot.
So there's Gina Torres plays Hel. And then...
Is that short?
For Helen.
Helen.
Helen. Okay.
Did you notice the father? I'm doing air quotes. Father calling her Helen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll get to daddy.
Oh my God.
We'll get to those daddy issues.
And then Victoria Pratt plays Sarge, who is the blonde... lady with the abs.
Surge.
Surge. Okay. Surge.
Surge.
There's also the mysterious voice.
Right.
Yes.
Katie looks so confused right now.
Yes.
For why, how, is, what... Yes.
Yes.
Question. These were two voice-heavy episodes.
Yeah.
So the voice is the leader of the rebellion.
Okay.
But we are unsure what they're rebelling against.
Okay.
No, they're rebelling robots. Against the Baileys, who control,
like,
the surface.
Irish coffee. Okay.
Yes. No Irish coffee.
Irish coffee has conquered the surface of the earth.
It does explain how green it is up there.
It's very lush. So we watched two half-hour episodes, speaking of, for this pod. The first was episode 9. Perceptions.
Yes, in their continuing tradition of vague titles.
Vague titles that
vague
don't
titles.
Really...
I don't understand. It doesn't apply either.
No.
It had nothing to do with perception.
Well,
no.
I mean, they perceived Helen's dad.
But, like, it didn't play with perceptions. They just saw things. They see things every episode.
They all perceived Helen's dad differently.
Okay, so,
was he a ghost?
No. Well, here was my immediate reaction was, so she met with two guard type characters and then saw the ghost of her father. So I was like, is this Hamlet? Hamlet?
I think you're the first person to compare this show to Shakespeare ever.
Let me give a quick overview of the episode before we attempt to just take it apart. So in this episode, we start with a science facility which is under attack nebulously. We never really see who's attacking them.
Yeah, it just explosions.
It just explosions, and then a bunch
Very
of characters.
Sam Raimi.
Yeah,
Very
Sam. All hiding, and we don't know any of them. Then we cut. Then there's opening, and it's amazing. And Katie, your face during that opening.
We all looked at Katie watching the opening theme, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it was a symphony.
It was.
I actually I wrote down that one of the first things said during the show, Rachel said, "Is this the same show?"
Yeah.
It's a recurring theme.
Yeah. Is this the same show? The quality of the film stock changed.
It did drop.
Oh, yeah.
It did drop
significantly worse.
And this wasn't a second season. This was.
This is still season one.
Still season one.
But they mid make it to season two.
So they're on a mission. So the trio show up at this facility, and they like see two guys. Then there's an explosion, and they see Hell's dad, and he's like, "You have to help them."
And they're like, "But he's dead."
And they're like, "He doesn't show up on any of our sensors." So they go in and they find the science people in disarray.
Wait, first, he explodes.
Oh, right. He explodes first.
Yes, the ghost explodes. I wrote that down because this confused me through to the end of the episode, even. I was still asking you guys questions about where the explosion was and where the hole was that the explosion made. And, like, how does a ghost explode if it's not real?
But that's in theme with the rest of the show, which is...
What?
No sense of space whatsoever in this show. Like, even in the lab, you cut between scenes and it's like, are they in the same building? Are they with the same... Because they, like, save some lab people, but then they have to go save different lab
people. There's more lab people further in the lab.
And they're trapped in a lab that's...
They're trapped in a containment. There are none. They're trapped in a containment field because something should be in the containment field has exploded and needs to be contained, but they want to get out?
Yeah.
Which is like, no, dudes, you took the risk. You gotta die. Like, that's sort of what's gotta happen.
I think they hand-wave that by saying, like, oh, they blew out the hydraulics with the last explosion. Because it's like a hydraulically sealed door. The point is that this show is not very good about establishing how its world works.
Right.
So Sarge has to cut through the door.
With a plasma cutter.
With a plasma cutter. And Hell just, like, sees her dad again and runs off.
Well, no, she's gonna, quote-unquote, look for another way in. As if the people working there and living there would not know a way in and out of a space.
Yeah, look for survivors as well, another way in.
Uh-huh,
I think she needed to focus on one or the other.
So at this point, the episode cuts between two plot lines. We follow Hell, who runs into her dad again, and he's like, come with me. But he's actually a force field, and like a hologram force field, and he like paralyzes her, and Cregan shows up. And this blew us away.
You remember Cregan?
Because it's a recurring character in the show. Right. That's a massive thing.
A recurring villain.
I have no context for.
What'd you think about his makeup?
He's got a chin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some flamey eyes. And they focused on his face a lot. Like,
Alex is losing her mind.
I've got a question for everyone. Who does Cregan work for?
I don't know.
I thought he worked for someone, but I think he works for himself.
I think he works for himself.
He's not the big baddie?
No.
No.
It's kind of a rogues gallery.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Were you looking for an overarching theme of badness?
I don't know if he's the Dr. Robotnik, you know, just kind of like he's little incompetent, but still ever present.
It's not like there's a overarching Skeletor in this movie, or in this show, that commands all the lesser bad guys. It's, as Tachi said, several disparate independent elements which control various aspects of the world.
I can respect that.
Optimistically, I'm hoping for a Sinister Six situation one day.
All the baddies come together.
Oof.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Anyway.
Mm.
Her story goes along where she's, like, paralyzed, and Cregan is going to track the voice through, like, the signals going through Hell's brain.
Yeah.
And then Hell, like, inverts her shield or something and pulls Cregan to her, and they have the worst scene ever.
That was weird. Who thought that was a good idea? Like,
picture for yourself. Take the screen. One half of the screen on the right is Hell writhing, like her face.
Yep.
Chin to top of the head, writhing, making weird faces, like eyes going everywhere. And on the other side of the screen, top to bottom, with his huge chin in focus, it's Cregan, who's just monologuing evilly while she does this.
And he's calm. He's super
so calm.
I think it was supposed to point out that he's, like, immune to the pain, like, he can suffer through it while she's being tortured by it, that he's real tough. But it was just so strange and creepy.
So long. It went on for 3 minutes.
It was like a full quarter of the episode.
And it didn't cut. It never cut away.
No.
You stare at this for minute after minute.
They didn't even cut between Like, they didn't go between takes or anything. It was just one straight shot of these two faces smished into the frame.
Why cut back and forth when you got the perfect master shot? So, the ghost situation. Now, I don't know if we made it clear that Cregan had a disc, a little tiny CD.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
That was, I wrote it down as the daddy disc because it's... It's the disc that he used to replicate the Hell's Dad. Now, you think that's the resolution of why they were seeing Ghost Dad, but no, because separately, in the other plot line, not Cregan Ghost Dad of Hell is also helping Sarge and Cleo.
Yeah. There's at least two ghost dads in this thing. One of them is controlled by Cregan. The other one is maybe a real ghost.
Yeah, it's a real yin and yang of ghost dad.
More like a yang and dang, that's dumb.
So, yeah, the other ghost dad is giving them advice, and Cleo's like, oh, it's a ghost. And Sarge is like, that's bullshit. There's got to be an explanation. Except Cleo keeps making fairly good points about how this really has no other explanation. It's too ridiculous to be anything but a ghost.
Yes. And references the sixth sensor.
Oh, God. Right.
Oh, yes. This is when the show messed up its own joke.
Yeah, because she said sixth sense or sixth sensor. And then they kept saying sixth sensor.
Cleopatra is one of her powers, as we've talked about, is pop culture references that no one else gets. And in her attempt to make sense of it, she said, like, six? Is this like some kind of sixth sense or sixth sensor thing? To which later Sarge referenced sixth sensor.
Yeah.
The correct way to do that joke is Cleo says sixth sense and Sarge says sixth sensor because she doesn't get the reference.
Yes.
But the show doesn't know how its own game works.
Yeah.
The game of writing?
The game of
the comedic
humor.
Game.
Yeah,
the comedic game is Cleo making pop culture references and no one else getting it.
Right.
Anyway, both of these scenes resolve in classic Cleo fashion with Sarge breaking into the containment area and Hell breaking out of the shield with Cregan and then 8 minutes of pew-pew laser fight.
No. This was a special pew-pew laser fight.
They did it was seizure-inducing.
It was seizure-inducing. But also, you know when you're playing laser tag and there's that... they put that base in the middle where it's like, you can also get points if you get that base.
Yeah.
Well, that's what's shooting big pong, green pong balls at them.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. And what was up with, the tubes with some sort of, spears inside that would expand?
Well, that was the thing. Question. That was the thing that was exploding and was going to take out 10 levels of the floors.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you imagine what the script said in that part?
No.
Where, the weird metallic dildos in fluid descend in their tube vessels.
Ominously indicating that something is bad.
Yeah.
I think we were all really disappointed that the disc with the dad wasn't a fluid.
It exploded. It had to be incendiary.
It looked like a miniature CD.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, back in the year 2000, it looked like a bagel chip.
Yeah.
A green bagel chip.
Green bagel chip.
And instead of, inserting it into something, they just, they flash-drived it. They stuck it in, and it just touched on the edge, and that's how they made it play.
Trying to figure out the tubes was like when we were trying to figure out the gambling in the previous episodes.
I compared it to that. I described it as an indecipherable tension machine. In my notes.
Yeah.
It causes tension, but you don't know what it's doing. So you have no gauge as to whether or not things are dire or things are improving.
We've seen a million movies where there's the countdown. And it's when we hit zero, the bomb's going to go off. Mm-hmm. So it's a cliche, but at least you know when the countdown is over, everything explodes. But with the tubes, does everything explode when they go up or down or touch something or run out of fluid?
Is there supposed to be lightning in the tubes or is that a bad thing?
I think lightning in the tubes was bad.
I gather that now, but only from the context of when it's all done, the dildos go up.
Yes.
And they say things are better now.
That's true. And literally there is a machine that says that it's better. It even goes, thank you. It thanks them.
It thanks them. Now, Here was my big question. Why did all of those scientists who work with that machine regularly, why were they unable to fix it? And Sarge, who knew nothing and only had Ghost Dad to instruct her, went in and fixed it in 5 minutes.
He didn't even give her...
Because it was Ghost Dad.
He didn't even give her good instructions.
No, he just said, go in there and stop it.
Yeah.
And like that as the muse of the idea.
Also, the way she stops it is nonsense.
No.
She shoots it 3 times, reaches it,
yep.
pulls out some wires, sticks them together with other wires, and poosh, it's solved.
She's just massaging the guts of the TARDIS.
I thought... Didn't she just like hit it with her fist?
Yes, she hit it with her fist.
Because I thought she just bashed the console till it finally fixed itself.
No, you're right. It is a TARDIS. It looks like a TARDIS. It looks like the new Doctor Who's central TARDIS
piece. It does look like... That's the weird thing is that it's a premonition of the TARDIS as we know it now. But at the time, she's just sort of reaching in as if she's searching for a particular... organ inside the dead carcass that she killed.
That she can get by feel.
Yeah. It was...
Her character is one of the more inexplicable regular characters.
Yeah. She's just sort of a hothead.
And there are only 3. Or yeah. 4, really, but...
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I just put something together.
Mm-hmm.
So this episode ends with, like, Hell pew-pew lasers all of Cregan's guys, and Sarge turns off the machine, and they all meet back up, and Sarge and Cleo jump, and Hell's like... Hell gets like rescued by her dad, who shows her out, and she can touch him this time.
Yep.
So is that like is there like a holograph dad, a ghost dad, and a non-ghost real dad?
Mm.
But he's dead. They all know it.
But anyway, so she's
Hamlet.
Like,
we forgot. We forgot to talk about how Cregan convinced Hell not to self-destruct by tempting her with the voice is keeping secrets about your father.
Yes.
From you.
Because her father had worked in this secret science facility.
Apparently. Oh, and at the beginning of them going in to rescue these people, one of the women they were rescuing was like, Helen?
Yep.
Helen, don't you recognize me? I'm Jane. I used to work with your father.
And Helen's like, what?
And then somebody drags her off, and that's the end of that.
Helen couldn't keep talking to her because she left the shot.
Out of frame.
Out of frame, out of existence.
Oh, man.
Out of existence.
How does this episode end?
Well, the end is the best thing, and it just clicked in my head. At that point, Hell's like, she's like, bye, Dad, and jumps. And then the lab, correct me if I'm wrong, finishes exploding.
Yes.
So what did Sarge do?
She prevented from, a nuclear meltdown.
But it still exploded.
Yes, everything still exploded, but it could have exploded worse.
Mm. But the problem present in the episode is that 2 chemicals are mixing. So when it blows up, aren't they just going to mix again?
Apparently not.
No.
With the addition
I don't remember the explosion, but I had to keep looking away because of the seizure-inducing flashing.
Yes. The green flashes of all the meltdown lasers were really, really bad and unhealthy, as Rachel has pointed out. Very painful. It was actually painful to watch this
painful.
Episode. Physically painful, as opposed to the psychic pain that we usually endure.
So
the mental fatigue.
Yeah.
I will say this episode did do something for me, which was for a brief moment, as Sarge goes into what is kind of clearly supposed to be like the melting down nuclear reactor.
Mm.
And there's like green lightning shooting out and hitting the walls and everyone's running. And she starts doing these like flips, which the show does. And she does the same flip like 7 or 8 times. That's how she advances, only flying cartwheels. But for a glimmering moment, I felt tension.
Oh.
And then I remembered she had a shield.
Yep.
And it's gone.
Both Sarge and Hell have these special devices on their wrists, in addition to their wrist lasers, which are their shields. And they work very much the same as Star Trek's shields work on their various Enterprises, where they just prevent the energy stuff from blasting through to and killing them.
So what was the hole? The hole that the dad was standing in? And then...
Yeah, like He says goodbye to Hell,
mm-hmm.
and then they go in the hole that he...
Jump down in the pit.
No, he's standing in a hole, like a busted out hole opposite.
Oh. This is your, right. Like this was Katie's first experience with, you know, jumping into a hole.
Yeah.
Just jumping into the abyss.
Oh, yeah. That's
what do you
oh,
think about that?
Comic hurts.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's right. How they get around.
Sorry. That's how they get.
That's
places.
The method of transportation is you there, travel down pit.
Is there a hay bale at the bottom?
No.
What bottom?
They have.
There's no bottom.
Get ready for this. They are all Spider-Man.
Yeah.
They all have web launchers.
Spider-Woman.
And they can just web launch to things.
Oh.
And like, sometimes they have rocket boots, depending on whether or
ooh,
not they need them at the time.
Boots.
Katie, I'm sorry. I forgot. If you go down deep enough, you'll get to the Christmas floor.
Yeah.
The mysterious secret Christmas floor.
Oh, so that's
isn't surprising.
The Christmas basement?
No.
That's not the bottom?
You gotta go through space, then you get to the Christmas level, then there's probably more.
I wonder if we'll see it again, because they seem to be recurring things now. Because
yes.
They recurred Cregan, in the next episode they recur the psychic, whose
Raina.
Name was Raina, and with her, the Hebrew Anti-Psychic Task Force.
Yes.
So it sounds like we're on our way to the next episode.
Well, actually, before
okay.
we do that, I noticed more interesting letters on the scientist people's coats.
Yes, but none of them were Hebrew.
None of them were
Hebrew
this
letters.
Time. Okay.
Because I looked, I was like, ooh,
okay.
Nope.
I was going to talk about this next episode, but since this is the time. As of the next episode, which also has this weird science force, we've seen this group of people 3 times, and we have no idea who they are, mm-hmm. what their motivations are, who they work for,
none.
Where their place is in the world. We don't have a single named character among them.
Ooh, that's a really good point.
It's just less world building.
Yep.
There's a world around them, but it's like when you play a video game without ever engaging the NPCs in a talk scene.
Yeah.
And you just get to like a cutscene, you're like, I wonder why I'm doing this here. Do I know this person? I don't know. Let's shoot things.
I guess I'm going toward that blinking light at the end of the, off in the distance. So, they are probably the same organization, but we have absolutely no context.
I don't think so because the lettering is different.
Oh.
No, I think they are, and I think that's just careless. Because clearly both organizations work with Voice, because in both instances when they have a crisis, Voice sends Hal.
Which episode was it we discovered that there's an invisible tracking camera on them
it's
at
this
all
next
times?
One.
That is
this
the next one.
Oh my god.
So let's dive right into
let's
the next episode. This is episode 10. It's called Trial and Error.
Did they come up with a list of titles before they wrote scripts?
Likely.
Yeah, I mean, it's not so much trial and error as it is...
Error and error?
Yes! That was going to be my joke!
I'm sorry.
But yes, trial and error involves the Hebrew... starts with the Hebrew Anti-Psychic Task Force.
Katie, which, that's our name. That's not... English.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah.
That's because we had to give them a name.
If you looked on their uniforms, they actually have some Hebrew letters on them.
Mm-hmm. But not all of them are Hebrew letters.
Yeah, others are just gibberish runes.
Well, I just noted that they seemed like the Lilu outfit from the Fifth Element, just over top of a jacket and pants.
Yeah, they're made of paper.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's creepy and weird.
I would like to take a moment, because it's in my notes, to mm-hmm. remind everyone before we start this episode that it has been 4 episodes now since we've seen Sarge's sister, who was rescued from the overworld and had to learn the ropes.
Yep.
Haven't seen her since. Just putting that out there.
Yep.
Moving forward.
Well, in this episode, I will confess before we get into the plot, like the Christmas episode, Trial and Error had the elements of a real episode of television. It
yeah.
had the pieces there. And as it tends to do, it fails.
We start with the Hebrew Anti-Psychic Task Force with everyone's favorite psychic, Raina, who is a megalomaniacal
psychic
who is a prisoner of these people. She's wearing like Home Depot style hardware around her neck because that's what they could find to like make harnesses for her, and a weird like psychic headband that's supposed to suppress her powers.
She's also wearing a straight jacket that
yes.
she can still
well it's like
be
straight
arms.
It's like straight sleeves.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly,
because
you need to still have the boobs, the cleave needs to come through.
Cleave is very crucial in this show.
Crucial.
But they basically put these sleeves on her which give her flipper arms.
Well, since we're talking about her appearance, I think we've all been discussing how great her makeup is.
Her makeup is incredible.
Great.
And she's in psychic jail. Like,
she's in psychic jail. Psychic jail, underground, strapped to a chair.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfectly applied lipstick and just a beautiful gradient of purple on either side of her face for her eyeshadow.
So you know she's a villain.
I guess so. Surprising no one, Raina breaks out of psychic jail.
No, she doesn't, though. She gets rescued by two betrayers.
Oh my
families.
God, we have to explain these to Katie.
With their, like, meaty gun
no,
arms?
No. Yeah, let Katie explain them to us.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, what did you think of those guys who came in and killed the actual guards? And
they
then
just grew some sort of weapon on their appendage that seemed gross.
All right, so let's go back a few episodes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And talk about the betrayers.
Yes.
And we are introduced to the betrayers in the first episode.
Yep.
Okay.
So the Baileys, one of the things they do is they kidnap people, actual people,
mm-hmm.
and then make them into weird sludge duplicates, like clones.
Okay.
Who can do things like make gun arms and things.
A la Terminator.
A la Terminator.
Or Gumby.
And then send them, or Gumby. Yes, or Gumby. And here's the thing. They just send them back to where they were and to just replace them. We're not quite sure what they're, like, why they're replacing people with robots. Like, that's not really ever explained.
They're betrayers.
But that's all that we're given.
But in these Christmas episode, it's established they have an urge to kill.
But why?
Because they're betrayers.
I'm not gonna smack you because I wouldn't do that.
Some kind of betrayer.
Ow!
Oh.
Why are you hitting yourself?
Abuse.
Audio humor on a podcast. Now that's innovative.
Redeemed.
So Raina manages to use her psychic powers despite the dampener on both of these betrayers, and convinces them that the betrayers are betraying each other. So they shoot each other.
Which is totally her MO.
Yeah.
Now, we need to establish that this is our trio is sent to, like, save Raina from betrayers.
Oh, that's right. Because
the voice... Yeah, the Baileys can't have her.
Yes, the voice does not want Raina to fall into the hands of the Baileys.
And the three of them show up, and the Baileys, like, turn on them and grow their gun arms and fire, and they shoot their guns at the Baileys. And it turns out now the Baileys have, like, adapted to be bulletproof. So for at least 10 seconds, they stand there and shoot at each other, unflinching, unmoving, invulnerable shields versus invulnerable Baileys.
Yeah.
With no
tension.
Nothing between them.
Oh, is this when they introduce Hyper Shield?
Hyper Shield. Yep.
Hyper Shield.
Hyper Shield.
So they're like, oh no, unbreakable Baileys? Turn on Hyper Shields. And they turn on the shields, and now the Baileys' bullets bounce off them.
Yeah.
And this achieves precisely nothing.
Even though betrayer bullets is what ends up killing the betrayers in the end.
They, like, introduce them, and then Raina saves them anyway.
Yep.
And has the betrayers kill each other. And then she didn't do it through the helmet. The helmet got knocked off her, and then Cleo puts the helmet back on her at the end.
Oh, that's right.
Like, sneaks up behind her and puts it on.
Yeah.
And thus they're able to capture her.
Correct.
And that was the teaser of Trial and Error.
And they determine, right as they, before they go to the opening credits, that they're going to see if she can use her powers on a full-fledged Bailey robot.
And this is when I went, hey, wait a second. This is a plot for a real episode of television. We have someone we know is not trustworthy, but they might have the power to stop the main enemy. Let's bring them along on an adventure and cross our fingers. Oh my goodness, it's like a dilemma and some stakes.
Oh, and they put a shunt in her neck when they get her back to their base will make her head explode.
Yeah, it's
I don't know what that was.
I believe it was described as thermal nanites in the brain.
Nanothermite incendiary.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I had to write down nanothermite incendiary.
It's a blue fluid that, once injected into the bloodstream, I guess makes you a bomb?
Can be exploded?
That's what we were led to believe.
And this bomb is set off by a button, which they call a switch. Oh, is that a New Zealand thing?
Say, yeah.
Oh, man. No, this show, by the way, Katie, is partially shot in New Zealand.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh. It might all be shot in New Zealand.
Might be.
I think so.
Except for when they went to Italy.
All right. It
That's
opens
a humor joke. Opens
it explains why the overworld is so lush and green in this post-apocalypse.
Yes.
The overworld, which they actually go to this episode, because they have to take... In classic Cleo fashion, they're like, how do we, like, sneak up on these enemies? Oh, let's just go to the surface and wait until one shoots at us. And so they go to the surface with Reyna to wait till one shoots at them.
But they give Cleopatra the power over the button.
Yes, the
power to kill
Reyna.
Because the voice decided.
Yeah.
The voice decided that she needed it.
But was the voice controlled in that decision?
Yeah, the voice... Reyna. Could have been influenced at that point in a psychic domino effect, as the show describes it, by Reyna.
Oh, God. It's so stupid.
So the Bailey approaches Reyna. Reyna starts communicating with it.
Psychically.
Psychically and instantaneously.
Correct.
And she is able to make it stand down from Code Red and convinces it that it wants to go... To get its leader.
First, that makes Sarge crazy.
Oh, yeah. God.
First, she makes Sarge crazy. Which isn't that hard.
And, this is the part where it's like, this is the part where there's kind of a plot. Where it's like, all right, Reyna is supposed to do the mission, is supposed to help us on the mission. And then, in a moment of mind games, callback, mind games, she instead says, hey, Sarge, this is psychically, of course. I don't know how to convey that. Hey, Sarge, I'm psychically telling you that I'm not being successful. You should go do something. You should come help me. To which Sarge then goes up and starts screaming, and this is basically gaslighting to make everyone think Sarge is crazy.
Her instruction to Sarge is specifically, distracted, launch a sneak attack. Sarge's handling of this is to run up to it, look it square in the face, scream, blah, 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 blah. I'm gonna kill you, then start shooting at it.
Yep.
That made no sense.
It made no sense, and then I believe Reyna convinces it to fly away and get its boss anyway.
Yeah.
That's sort of clever, because Reyna's like, Reyna convinces it these foes are too strong, you need to get help.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, like, there's some cleverness there, but it's completely unnecessary.
In the meantime, Reyna is controlling the voice through Hell and convincing Hell to convince the voice to convince the robot butler stripper Mauser.
Oh, Katie, Mauser's a robot.
Oh, yeah, Mauser's a robot.
Mauser's a robot?
Yeah, the guy with the abs.
The sparkly abs.
He's not programmed for sex.
Yeah, he's not programmed for sex.
The show makes a point of that.
Yeah. He's not programmed for sex, Katie. Well, then stop asking.
Why did they give him 12 abs then? Like 12
they're filled
rows.
With fluid, probably.
Well, it's like a waterbed, right?
A channeled waterbed. So even though the voice initially was like, Cleopatra's the one in control of killing or not killing Reyna, the voice is now telling the robot to not let Cleopatra kill Reyna.
So we discover quickly that the voice is controlling Sarge. She's controlling Hell. She's somehow controlling the voice through Hell, which isn't
exactly
really explained
at all.
And she's controlling Mauser through the voice.
Yes.
And we can't determine if she's controlling Mauser directly or if the Mauser just trusts the voice.
She's just that strong.
Like, is she? Is
she
it
might
her
be,
controlling Mauser?
Or she's just that good at being psychic.
Oh, God.
But,
so, naturally, this is when Mauser decides, for everyone's safety, to handcuff Cleopatra to her chair?
The bondage chair.
The bondage chair. Why do they just have a bondage chair lying around? Why are you sitting in the bondage chair?
Have you seen this show before?
I have seen this show. But the bondage chair, it's with PVC pipe fittings.
Yeah.
On the back of the chair that her hands just slip into comfortably, I would say. It looked pretty fine. Didn't look too bad. Also, how could she not escape from that? I'm not sure.
A lot of acting in this show is basically miming against something painful.
Like, you're either inside a force field or being held captive by psychic forces or something like that.
Hey, it cuts the budget.
Yeah, it does. So, meanwhile, back on the surface, the King Bailey has come to visit.
And he's got, like, a texture, so you know he's important.
He's got, like, a dual glowing mohawks on his head, I thought. I thought he had these two glowing ridges on his head.
Well, I thought he just had, like, a weird wavy texture on him.
That's very interesting. I did not see that. And the same sort of scene starts playing out where Reyna is talking to it. We, for some reason, get its POV and see that it is evaluating
like heat
threats.
Vision?
Yeah, the heat vision. It's evaluating the threats. Deems Reyna is a threat and then deems that she isn't a threat. And Reyna convinces it to sort of beam her up.
Right. And then it tries to leave, but she's like, no, no, kill Hel and Sarge first.
Yeah. Which is the first smart decision the show has ever made.
And then Cleo actually saves the day in this episode.
With her stripper powers.
Yeah.
God, the worst.
So, the switch.
Are you guys all remembering this now?
No, I remember her sitting there with her, like, one Google Glass... with like a slotted spoon on
yes it was a slotted spoon
like it was supposed to be something technologically advanced.
Yep.
Oh yeah, she had on this eye thing.
Yep.
So she could see through the invisible camera.
Yeah, the invisible camera that we've just heard about now, which would have explained so much earlier on the show,
which she didn't want to do. She would rather go and make sandwiches and have what's his face, Abby
Mauser.
Robot,
Mauser.
Abby Mauser, Robot,
take control. Oh,
okay, bump and grind.
Yes, so she starts undulating. Yeah.
Yes,
because she's tied up
and can't hit the button switch.
The camera really wants you to see the bump and grind.
Yeah, well, she literally says, "Bump and grind, don't fail me now,"
and she's humping the air.
Because she can't reach the table, I guess?
Yes.
Right, she's handcuffed.
She's handcuffed. Restrained. She's restrained to the chair.
But her hips aren't restrained.
No.
But it doesn't look like she's trying to, like, hip check the table. She's just undulating.
Yep.
It's almost...
Stripper powers!
Stripper powers. It's almost one of the writers remembering what's on Cleo's, character sheet. She has stripper powers. She can knock a table over by bumping and grinding.
And the thing about it is, like, it's not even attractive or sexy. It's just weird.
No.
It's just weird.
They're going super weird. They're going for a gag. They're failing.
I was gagging.
But that's...
She just succeeds on one of these and knocks over the table, and that presses the button. And then the betrayer, which now has Reyna's face on it, like on its monitor head, which is actually kind of cool. He's like, oh no, and like steams up. And you're like, oh, are they killing Reyna? But no, it cops out and has it crash into the ocean instead.
Yeah.
And at the end of the episode...
This would have been the right place for an explosion.
Yeah, it would have been a perfect place for an explosion. The thermonanites.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Nanothermite incendiary.
The episode has the audacity to end like... Who was Reyna really controlling in the end? Whose decisions were our decisions and whose weren't?
Right, while they're, like, just cleaning things?
Right.
They were just, like, wiping stuff down and just cut to, like, them just, you know, post-battle.
Like, I think they wanted it to be a mystery, like a question you're asking, but it's just confusing.
Yeah, nothing about this show so far has made straightforward sense. There's just a real lack of coherent anything. Narrative, character, writing, world building. And but
you know what is on point? The costume department.
The costume department.
Goodness. Those are some hot foxes in those outfits.
Heck yeah.
Welcome,
yeah.
Katie, what do you think?
So much midriff and cleave.
Yeah, there is not a single woman that does not have some part of her chest exposed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Even the scientist lady.
Oh, yeah, because they had, like, weird arm shield things over their sexy, inexplicably sexy outfits.
I wasn't crazy. The scientists had just giant tears in the torsos of their outfits, right?
Yep. Correct.
Yes,
okay.
They did.
Wasn't just me.
Nope. So, Katie, now that you've seen two whole episodes of Cleopatra 2525... Do you think this deserves to be among the ranks of the worst shows of all time?
Oh my goodness, hooray, yes. Yes. No, this is hooray. This is insane. It's so all over the map and so terrible. I mean it should be
studied on a podcast.
Studied on a podcast for sure. Oh. If not put in the annals of history.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Well, with that resounding affirmation, I think we've devoted enough of our precious lives to this show for now. So tune in next time for more terrible television as we continue our hunt for the worst show on earth.